Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Take a second for the presentation to come in. Before that happens, I just want to let you know that I have brochures that tell you about the Bosser Children's Hospital up here. Please take them. I don't want to have to carry them back home. So I'd love for you to all get a copy. I have no relationship to disclose. First of all, I'd like to give you a little background on the Bosser Children's Hospital. It's been in the planning stages since 2005, and it was noted that during the last two decades, of course, the Iraqi healthcare system has gone from a very modern, high-tech system to one of third-world technology. Childhood cancer incidence in Iraq is 8 to 10 times higher than any place in the West, and especially in southern Iraq. 55% of the cancer cases in Iraq are children under 5, and 15% of children do not live to the age of 1. Causes are speculated to be war causes, possibly depleted uranium, stress of war on health, also petroleum. That's where most of the oil fields are, is in the southern Iraq area. The Bosser Children's Hospital will be the first new hospital built in 28 years in Iraq. We hope that it provides a template for future hospitals and for the rest of the healthcare system to expand on, both in training, technology, and design and functionality, organizational, etc. We want it to become a center of excellence for Iraq, something that they can model after. This presentation will talk about Project Hope's roles in this hospital. We are doing the equipping and the training and a lot of the management training and transition planning. The Bosser Children's Hospital is a collaboration. We have lots of public partners and private donors. Public stakeholders, you can see the list. They are many, to include the First Lady of the United States, USAID, United Arab Emirates, and of course, Department of State, Army Corps of Engineers, and most important, the Republic of Iraq, Minister of Health. The private stakeholders are Project Hope, and we have many, many donors, from big equipment donors, Varian, Siemens, and Philips, to T. Boone Pickens, and the Prince of Abu Dhabi. It was noted early in the project that we would have to have community involvement in this project, especially during a war. And so they had a lot of events initially to rally the community behind the project, which has been very successful. We haven't had any major hits on the hospital during construction. You'll see that the children are riding on a wall. That wall surrounds the hospital today still, drawing pictures of their hopes for the hospital and the community. The hospital is going to be a 100-bed hospital, 101 actually. It's 94 regular beds, 7 NICU beds. It's a pediatric hospital with a focus on oncology, two oncology wards, one surgical ward, a general peds ward, 3 ORs. Radiation therapy will be the first modern LINAC in country. They have 2 other LINACs in country, but neither of them work at the moment, so there is no radiation therapy capability right now in Iraq. Chemotherapy will be there also. They do that now in Iraq, but they have very few drugs to work with. We hope to be able to enable them to get lots of drugs to be able to work with to treat the kids. They'll have the first hospital information system in Iraq. We start training on that this month. And then nurse-physician housing, and also it's built on a large site. It's going to be a beautiful place. Construction is managed currently by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in a combat zone. That one in the middle is me, the shortest one. Construction contracts, there are 22. This is a very complex project. 22 contracts managed by the Corps of Engineers. UN is running many of them, or doing many of them, but they're all managed by the Corps of Engineers. The blue, you can see, let's see if this pointer will work. This is the main hospital here, so that's one contractor from Jordan. We have other contractors doing everything from the roads areas around here to the steam plant to the warehouse. It's just a very, very complex project. The start of the project was a swamp up at the top, and it's now, you'll see what it's going to look like at the bottom. August 2008 picture. It doesn't look very pretty because, of course, you have no landscaping and roads around it yet, and you also don't have stone cladding. That stone cladding is going to make a world of difference on the exterior look of the hospital. Project Hope has been doing the professional training. Short term, in 2006, when we thought it was going to open very soon, we did a lot of, we did 92 Iraqi nurses training in Jordan and Oman. Once we found out it was going to go later, we've started this midterm training. We are doing now clinical internships in both nursing and ancillary fields. We're also going to do the diploma nursing and also laboratory more radiology training. And then pediatric oncology fellowships have also started. 46% of the staff physicians have had updated clinical skills, and radiation oncology team training is starting shortly. Long term, we hope to do bachelor nurse programs and RN nurse bridging programs. We're also equipping the hospital with medical equipment. Out of the 453 line items of equipment that are going into the hospital, we are managing or ordering 220 of those. We also manage the database to make sure that we're not duplicating efforts. We have the construction contractor providing equipment. We have UHS, which is our medical coordinator in Jordan, providing equipment. And also the UN Development Program of Iraq is doing all the furniture and IT for the hospital. Our portion was originally going to be about $18.6 million of high-tech equipment. It's now probably over $24 million because of the delays. Again, our 220 line items. $7 million cash from Abu Dhabi, $11 million in donated equipment, and preferential pricing when we can't get donated equipment, as we are a nonprofit. We also recognize the need for management training, transition planning. We have 12 directors who are opening this hospital. None of them have ever done that before. They are all very talented people, very smart people, but they've never worked in a modern hospital or opened a modern hospital before. So we've been working with them on transition planning and how they're going to be able to do that. It ranges from all of these types of tasks, from initial project familiarization with plans, and some of the constraints that we have is we had originally planned to be on site at the hospital for the last 6 months prior to opening, so we could work daily with the hospital directors and the management team. We haven't been able to live there yet. We can only go for 45 minutes at a time to the site because of the war effort. Earlier this year, our COO was hit by a IED on his way out of the hospital. He's still in rehab, very seriously injured. So it's not just us, but even the Corps of Engineers can only go to the site for 45 minutes at a time. So we've had to use other methods. We bring the directors to other countries, to Lebanon, to Jordan. We work with them in Baghdad. We bring them onto our little post in Basra, but it's very dangerous for them to do so. They have to do a different car every day. They have to take, you know, different transportation. They have to meet in different places. They can't be seen working with Americans, just as they can't be seen working with us on the site. So it's a challenge. But anyway, these are the types of things that we're working with them on to try to make them successful when they open the hospital. One of the major things we've done with them is the phasing plan, and this is based on how they are going to be able to staff and where we are in the training process, who's going to be able to open what area. So we're currently in phase zero. Phase one will be just moving in, familiarization with the hospital, learning how to use the HIS system, learning their policies and procedures, et cetera. Phase two will be the soft opening. We hope to happen in May, where they'll just open the outpatient area and some radiology and pharmacy and lab. Phase three would then be most of the inpatient as well. And phase four would be the full opening where radiation therapy would be opened. The reason it's so late for radiation therapy is because the training is so long and they won't be done with training until that time. So we don't want to put in the LINAC and the simulator prior to them being ready. We want to make sure that they're successful in that as well, and that the equipment is still good for them when they are ready to use it. This is a demonstration of trying to show the coordination between the training, which is up at the top of this slide. If I can get my little mouse to show you. Here's the clinical training that's happening across there. radiation oncology training, the hospital information, the MD training is ongoing, etc. Bone marrow transplant and PT will be towards the end. That's not happening right now. Down here is our phases that we've got, and here's the staffing that's required for each of the sections. So phase one, when we actually open the doors and they move in and start familiarizing themselves with the hospital, they're going to need 200 staff. Well, right now they have about 45. They're down here, and so those are the ones that we've been working with. And they just have recently gotten from the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Finance, the INTERREC, the employment degrees, they call them. We would call them authorizations or FTEs to hire the right number of people to go to phase one. But they don't have enough to go to phase two yet, but we're working on having this plan for them to be able to get there. And this is just showing the relationship between all the contracts and what we can do for patient care. Again, working on trying to develop the phasing. So for instance, we only have interim power out here until April. And so we can't put an MRI in a place that only has power two hours a day, or every 2 hours on and 3 hours off, or whatever that might be, and emergency generators. So those type of things influence it. We have security provided by the U.S. government up until end of January, and then the Iraqi government will take over on the security for the site. That influences who can be on the site and when. The wastewater treatment plant won't be done until June. Well, the government of Iraq won't let us start seeing patients until that is completed. So there are just all sorts of moving parts trying to determine and figure out when they can actually do what portions of operations in the hospital. And then this one just shows a little more of the political ramifications. We're under U.S. government control until that end of January, where we turn it over to the Iraqis, and then it's the government Iraq control. We have currently great White House support, as Laura Bush is very much involved in this, and we have all of these things going on, the Corps of Engineers, the equipment coordinators, etc. These are the tasks that we're trying to accomplish during each of these phases to get them to the point where government Iraq will be able to take over and will be able to complete all these operational tasks once they move into the hospital. One of our concerns is that we won't be able to be in the hospital with them when that happens, because once the security goes away, we may not be able to be there. So we're still working on that. However, we will still be continuing to train nurses, doctors, other professional staff up until 2016. So building any normal hospital in the United States is a complex process. And it's expensive, and it's very difficult. But working with all these different players in Basra has been quite challenging. We have a host nation government as the owner. We have foreign government giving money to the UN to do other things. We have private equipment and donors who have some strings attached to what they're doing. We have foreign commercial contractors. We have a DOD component program manager. And, of course, we're in a combat zone with six-month rotations for all the people who are managing the project. But it looks like it's going to work. And this is who we're working for children of Iraq, to have better care and better health in southern Iraq. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Are you taking questions?
No, we'll take questions at the end. So our next speaker is Andy Cooper. And Andy began her career in Southeast Asia doing social justice and human rights work. She has an MPH in global health promotion from the George Washington University and also completed a fellowship with the AIDS Support Organization, or TASO, in Uganda, working to integrate food aid and supplementation into care for HIV persons. Andy joined Project Hope, so she also works for Project Hope, in January 2008. And has provided direct technical assistance to their Orphans and Vulnerable Children projects in Namibia, Mozambique, and South Africa. She also manages other projects in Namibia, in India, and in China. And Andy's going to talk about caring for orphans and vulnerable children in Africa.